child, we miss my heart, child. And even though we both came from the same places, the money and the fame made us all change places. How could it be through the misery that came to pass? The hard times make a true friend afraid to ask for currency, but you can run to me when you need, and I'll never leave, honestly, someone to believe in. As you can see, it's a small thing to a true. What could I do? Real homies help you get through. And coming new, he'd do the same thing if he could. Cause in the hood, true homies make you feel good.
DJ Rhymes,
he be acting up, call the cops. Bringing a cease to the peace that was on my block. And never stopped when my mama asked me, will I change? I tell her, yeah, but it's clear I'll always be the same until the end of time.
Tell God, forgive me for one sin. Matter of fact, maybe more than one. Look back at all the hatred against me. Fuck all of them. Jesus died at age 33. That's 33 shots from twin Glocks and 16 apiece. That's 32, which means one of my guns was holding 17. 27 hit your crew, 6 went into you. Everybody gotta die sometime. Hope your funeral never get shot up. Bullets tear through the innocent, nothing is fair. Niggas roll up, shooting from wheelchairs. My heart is racing, tasting revenge in the air. I let this shit slide for too many years. Too many times now, I'm strapped with a couple of Macs. Too many nines, if y'all niggas really with me, get busy, load up the semis. Do more than just hold it, explode the clip until you empty. There's nothing in our way, they bust, we bust. They rust, we rust, let fly and feel it. I feel it in my gut that we take these bitches to war. Lie them down, cause we stronger now, my nigga, the time is now.
All I need is
another album out, that's what I'm about. More, getting raw till the day I see my casket buried as a G while the whole world remembers me until the end of time.
These broken wings.
And good morning, CKLN listeners. It is November 11th, 2010, here on CKLN's Rude Awakening on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. As your host, BK, a.k.a. VJ, and sorry for being late. Don't know what happened. It's the exact same go bus I take into town as I'm here on my my Call of Duty Pack Ops deep behind enemy lines here in Communist Canada, trying to break free of some of our social constipation and help you folks do the same, just because we got bigger interests at play, bigger things at work. And by that, I do mean the forces behind globalization. Just saw an article on Yahoo News yesterday where our own Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, was encouraging more global cooperation on the financial crisis. And then in yesterday's Metro, as I was thumbing through, more echoes of the same. It sounds like a bunch of very smart, very powerful people are desperately worried about how to deal with this, this economy thing. And demanding closer ties between nations of the world, which is in fact what the concept of globalization is. It is the centralization of control by central bankers and multinational corporations over the people and resources of the entire planet. Scary stuff, kids.
Yeah.
Now, to accomplish this, they've been working for several generations now, for the last few hundred years. Definitely of note on paper. In the last 100-150, there's a ton of evidence that reveals who the Anglo-American establishment is. But I'll let you know that all the issues around China and India, Chindia, taking our jobs, as South Park would say, and so on. All this was predicted by John Dee in the 1500s, where he came up with the most favored nation trading status, which the British Empire was going to grant to different countries around the world who played ball with their global control system. And that's essentially who's behind this. I haven't said this in a bit, but essentially the British Empire ran the world for 500 years and never stopped. Their Royal Institute for International Affairs, a.k.a. Chatham House, set up the Council on Foreign Relations in New York, the Canadian Council of Chief Executives here in Canada, and crown think tanks worldwide in mostly Commonwealth countries. And so they're behind this. They're Royal Institute for International Affairs. They're a think tank of a couple of thousand of the most powerful and wealthy and influential people in England, and the similar organizations that work in countries worldwide. The one in London was set up around.
What's going on? It was a nightmare. Miss Lenoir and I went outside to wait for you when we were attacked by these zombies.
was set up by, well, zombies, basically. A bunch of the business elite kissing butt to try and get ahead. And that's who they create. That's how they create these sort of groupthink circles. As Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com has said, some of these organizations almost seem communist in their makeup. Because, while you think there might be some sort of localized associations, you wouldn't think there would be national associations of supposedly competing media barons, competing corporate barons, competing politicians from different parties who all, attend the same meetings at the same think tank organizations. You wouldn't think there would be these groups, maybe conferences, of different interests, but not, 2,000 or 3,000 the most powerful people in America being part of the Council on Foreign Relations. And also they set up their MI6, which set up the OSS, which became the CIA, and so on and so forth. So you have the Anglo-American establishment centered in London and New York, primarily with, satellites in Washington and the Vatican and the Jesuits fitting in somewhere. And then, of course, Dubai and Saudi Arabia and so on. So that's just to frame the bigger picture, which is what they don't want us to understand and deal with very easily. Because it is taking place right now. We are kind of at the beginning of the middle of the end here. I'm on page 25 of yesterday's Metro Daily newspaper from the 10th of November. Here on the 11th of November 2010, Remembrance Day. We'll get into some Remembrance Day talk as well. But it says here, trade gap, currencies loom over G20 talks. Summit may endorse supervision of banks, leaders likely to back bigger role for some nations at IMF. And there's a quote here, the present world economy is unbalanced. It's unbalanced in a way that can't persist if we are going to have a thriving global economy. Paul Volcker, economic advisor to U.S. President Barack Obama and former Fed chief. And the article starts, tensions over currencies and trade gaps are simmering ahead of the Group of 20 summit tomorrow and Friday in Seoul as America's move to flood its sluggish economy with $600 billion U.S. of cash triggers alarm in capitals from Berlin to Beijing. Export-reliant nations fear the U.S. Fed move will drive more cash into their markets in search of higher returns, driving their currencies even higher and hurting manufacturers that provide jobs and security for fast-growing populations. At the same time, China has maintained tight control over its currency, adding to criticism it has kept artificially low and gives Chinese exporters an unfair advantage. You know, it's funny. When you see criticism like this persist and no action is really taken on it, you can believe the criticism is more for our benefit, for our brainwashing than for anything else. Because, to be perfectly honest, if they want to do something about it, they would. There was talk of tying trade with China to their movement on certain human rights issues. And that was the talk, and then that talk was dismissed, and then the new thinking became, you know what? If we open trade with them, then through that process of exchanging ideas, exchanging goods and services, and building closer relations, then their government will institute, you know, better human rights policies, more open, freer, democratic societies, and then that didn't happen, and so. And so you get the sense that the people who say these things initially aren't exactly serious about this. And when they're saying, you know, China's doing this and that, it's really to blame them for what they're doing to us. So our corporations in charge of our corporate media are screwing us, and they're robbing us, and the governments they control are overtaxing us, and they're moving towards total control over us and surveillance over us, and they're ignoring serious health risks posed by things like fluoride in our water, by genetically modified foods, by aspartame, by other toxins in our environment, by what even if you go to cancer.ca is admitted 40% cancer rates for women and 45% for men, according to trends in 2009. So you know, that's what they expect for the future, about 40-45% of us to get cancer. And so all of this is ignored by having enemies overseas who they can point at. And say, you know, are worse, and if we don't trust the people who are in charge of our countries, then it's possible that China and other nations out there will do even more damage to our economies and our living standards and so on. A whole bunch of claptrap, absolute insanity. In fact, the plan of the New World Order group of people, the shadow government behind you know, the concept of globalization and centralizing their power globally and creating a permanent scientific dictatorship is to make China the next policeman of the world after the U.S. exhausts itself, which should happen fairly soon, over the next 5-10 years maybe, in the sands of the Middle East and perhaps even in larger squabbles with Russia, China, India, you know, other countries around the world, Venezuela, Iran. You know, all of these have been posited, and yet in this climate, today is Remembrance Day, November 11, 2010, and we have video games like Call of Duty Black Ops out there, which fans were lining up for recently. Was on the cover of the Metro, a very ominous, scary cover of sort of a half robot soldier in shadow with glowing eyes and two handguns pointed down as part of the video game promo. And you can see the conflation of everything that's going on here, you know, giant unstable world, and then the selling of the need for more soldiers, while war is normalized, warmalized as it were. So, what does this all mean here on Remembrance Day? As I break into some neurolinguistics, and actually slow down, like a politician should, well. I'd say it reflects, you know, ideas on what we should remember. And one of the things I'd like us to remember is the work of General Smedley Darlington Butler. For those of you out there who don't know Smedley D. Butler, it was revealed in the McCormack-Dickstein Committee report hearings, congressional, U.S. Congressional McCormack-Dickstein Committee hearings in 1934, that Smedley Darlington Butler was recruited by Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the last President George Bush and the father of the previous President George Bush, who was also a Nazi banker working with Union Banking Corporation. Brigadier General Smedley Darlington Butler was recruited by Prescott Bush and other American oligarchs in 1933 to try and stage a fascist coup in America. The Nazi Party, the American Nazi Party, was doing very well at the time, had rallies at Madison Square Garden. And Smedley Butler was a top brigadier general who helped overthrow many Latin American and Caribbean countries in the 1910s and 20s for companies like Chiquita Banana and others. And so he was an accomplished general, beloved by his troops. And the American oligarchs at the time, some of the top business leaders who wanted to stage a fascist coup, thought if they could recruit Smedley Butler, then and make him, you know, president or at least leader of the military coup, then the soldiers at the time would obey him and would go along with the idea of a coup. So Smedley Butler worked with the coup plotters long enough to find out who they were expose them, and it all came out again in the McCormack-Dickstein Committee hearings of 1934 in front of the U.S. Congress. Now, why is this important? Well, Smedley Butler came to a few realizations. As a highly decorated and exceptionally successful general operating in the early 1900s and through the 1930s for the United States government and the Department of War at the time, as opposed to the Department of Defense, a name change which was meant to sort of sell us sell us the idea of war a little bit easier. Smedley Butler, you know, not only exposed, you know, the big business behind this, but he wrote a book called War is a Racket, and said that for much of his career, he had been a gangster for capitalism. And as a gangster for capitalism, he had helped suppress countries and populations in quote-unquote banana republics, which is the name comes from the fact that U.S. corporations tried to overthrow these Caribbean nations to, you know, steal their bananas and so on, Chiquita and others. And he said he was a gangster for capitalism. And he basically said war is a racket. And he exposed war as being, you know, nothing but a tool of, you know, foreign policy, a country's foreign policy, which is controlled by big business. It's not in the interest of national security. It's not in the best interest of the people. And Alexander Solzhenitsyn, you know, a famous Soviet dissident, once said that war is only used as an excuse to suppress dissent at home. I'm paraphrasing. But that's what they do. They try and get their paper up with the war situation. And I bring that up because so many articles here. You know, I'll flip to the Metro again and I'll show you because there's so much hype around Remembrance Day. And here you go. Recording wartime stories on page 15 of yesterday's Metro here. And Steve Crechet, a 23-year-old from Gatineau, Quebec resident, studying at the University of Quebec, said it's very important that young people understand. And then you got to think, you know, understand what? You know, understand what? And this is being promoted by the Metro. And it says here, recording wartime stories about a bunch of veterans talking about the war. And I got nothing against the veterans out there. I see them out there selling poppies and so on. And I can understand, you know, their point in terms of wanting to validate their service. But at the same time, to not understand, you know, that Wall Street is behind, you know, most of the big wars of the past 20th century, that wars are always engineered by the global financial elite to cause chaos, to speed up social changes. You know, as they've said, you can get more done in 5 years of war than you can in 50 years of peacetime. And as the post 9/11 world, for those of us who remember a pre 9/11 2001 world, you know, reveals, you know, they can get a ton of things done. They can take away our privacy, take away our rights, step up surveillance, create massive new government agencies like in the U.S. Homeland Security, which is basically swallowing the rest of the federal government and taking over, you know, all domestic security while aiming it at the U.S. people. And the TSA, Transportation Safety Authority, which sort of replaced the FAA and is now, you know, either scanning people, you know, with naked body scanners that not only are you know, an invasion of privacy and embarrassing, you know, form of humiliation, but potentially cancer-causing, or they're aggressively groping passengers, groping genital areas, breasts, and so on, as you know, ostensibly to look for bombs, but in the broader sense, more as a an act of submission, teaching us how to submit, and so. There's a micro and there's a macro. Start off with the macro today about the G20 and about the global financial crisis, which apparently we need more globalization to fix, even though globalization was the cause of it. And then you move that to some of the micro issues, like how it affects, you know, the way our bureaucracy interacts with us, our daily socialization, our cultural socialization, and how they get us to go along with all of this. Back to the article here on... back to the article here on recording wartime stories. We live in a society where everyone shares. We have Facebook, we have tweets, and we have blogs. But veterans were from a generation that didn't share. Quote, when they returned to Canada in 1945 and 1946, they didn't talk about the war. With the average age of veterans being 87 or 88 years old, many feel this is their last chance to tell their stories, he said. Hear veteran stories in their own words at thememoryproject.com. And got to encourage people out there when thinking of Remembrance Day and when going along with, you know, the general feelings of patriotism that that we all want to experience. Just got to remind people out there that 9/11 was an inside job. It was 9 years ago. And if we as a culture don't get used to the idea of dealing with governments that stage false flag terror and in many cases create false flag reality, then we won't be able to stop it. Because what's essentially happening is a re-glorification of war, which happens periodically, and has happened for hundreds of years. I mean, just go check through, you know, walk through a local park, you know, here in Toronto, walk up one of the streets downtown. You will notice tons and tons of memorials to war throughout our city here in Toronto and throughout cities around the world. Go take a history class. You'll see tons and tons of stories about war. Go to a Chapters or Indigo or any other big bookstore. You'll, again, see tons and tons of books about war, most of it suggesting almost natural causes without, you know, looking at the people who profited from these wars. Even in terms of the control of the banking system, the Rothschild family about 300 years ago supposedly sent word back that Napoleon had lost a war between the French and the British at the time. And it caused everyone to bet heavily on British stocks. But in fact, Napoleon had won the war. And so Rothschild bought up a bunch of French stocks cheap. And when they soared again, he took control. And his family, the Rothschild family, go to Rothschild.org for more on their work, where you can see them talk about their own successes. You know, took over control of much of the banking system of Europe. There's war has always been used as a tool of foreign policy. It's always been used as a tool by the oligarchs running society to socially re-engineer us and to basically plunder each other and plunder the people. They can plunder us by getting us all to sacrifice during war, use less, and so on, as happened during World War I and World War II. And they can also use it as an excuse to steal stuff from other countries. And so how do they get us going along with this year after year? Well, there is propaganda out there, to be sure, but there's also our cultural and chemical castration. And one of the issues I want to deal with on today's show is fluoride, because fluoride is something easy for us to remember. I'm talking about Remembrance Day here. We can remember it. It's in our food. It's in our water. And it's something that's dangerous. And I was even on Twitter with Mayor Miller last night, you know, trying to get him hip to it, because he posted some silly Monty Python thing. And I just kind of went off on him posting that when, you know, 40% of us are supposed to get cancer. And then we went back and forth very briefly. I tweeted a lot about the fluoride issue. But Dr. Paul Connett of fluoridealert.org was on the Alex Jones Show. Going to give myself and yourself a break from me for a sec and play this clip.
I want to be clear as we introduce our guest today here in studio. Back in 2000, they testified before Congress, other scientists, and environmental researchers, toxicologists. I've interviewed some of those folks. The vast majority, I think it was over 90% of their toxicologists at the EPA, also the FDA had signed to send letters. The vast majority said sodium fluoride's deadly poisonous, increases cancer. Toxicologists wrote this book, and it's got a nice bibliography for you to check out all the facts. This is the real science. And we're going to discuss this because even if you filter your water, you're bathing in it. Or it's being sprayed now as a pesticide on the foods, on the crops, and then it bioaccumulates. But instead of Alex Jones talking about this, we go to Dr. Paul Connett. He is the director of the Fluoride Action Network, FAN, fluoridealert.org, and the executive director of its parent body, the American Environmental Health Studies Project. He has spoken and given more than 2,000 presentations in 49 states and 52 countries on the issue of waste management. He holds a bachelor's degree from the University of Cambridge and a PhD in chemistry at Dartmouth College and is a retired professor of environmental chemistry and toxicology at St. Lawrence University. He lives in Canton, New York. Again, fluoridealert.org. Congratulations on your book and your tireless efforts, sir.
Thank you, Alex, very much indeed.
So, you've got the floor. Tell us about your awakening, the basic science. Go over the fact that most of the, even government scientists are saying, get this out. They've approached the government, but still these interests lobby millions of dollars, even in small towns, to get it in the food, get it in the water, to give the kids the fluoride pills, the toothpaste. I mean, they are just pushing this.
Absolutely. Well, if people go to our webpage, they'll find over 3,000 professionals, dentists, doctors, nurses, all kinds of professionals involved in health, environment, and so on, have signed a statement calling for an end to fluoridation worldwide. So I've been researching this for 14 years, and I didn't want the issue because 14 years ago I was very busy teaching chemistry and working on the waste management that you've just talked about, and that was taking up most of my weekends and holidays. But my wife put down this bunch of papers on my desk and said, "Dear, would you read these?" I said, "What is it?" She said, "Fluoridation." I said, "Take that away. These people are crazy."
Yeah, Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what most people have been brainwashed to believing. And it's one technique to keep the average person, the journalist, the scientist, the doctor, the dentist, away from the literature. Because if someone with an open mind reads the literature, they will be appalled, as I was that afternoon 14 years ago. And I remember saying to my wife as we were walking to the village council to discuss this, they were deciding whether to continue it or not, I said, "This is going to be easy. This is going to be easy. When people hear what I read this afternoon, there's no way they're going to continue that." However, it took us 7.5 years to get fluoride out of our little village of Canton, New York, because all the dentists came in with their white coats on and the doctors and so on, and people were saying...
And the AMA major organizations... They are all on record paid off by the chemical industry.
Absolutely. And in fact, the key moment in the history of this, Alex, was in 1950 when the U.S. Public Health Service endorsed fluoridation. No trial had been completed. Practically no health studies had been published. And yet they endorsed it for the whole country. And within a few, 1 or 2 years, all these professional organizations, the ADA, the AMA, the APHA, and so on and so on and so on, they all rolled over like a string of dominoes, again, with no science on the table. So it wasn't scientific in 1950. And when people read our book, The Case Against Fluoride, they'll find it's not scientific today. They're behaving just like industry, polluting industry. The first thing is deny, deny, deny.
Well, I'm not an environmental, expert. I'm not a PhD in environmental chemistry and toxicology, a doctor, but I can read the mainline studies. And one of the most studied things, going back to even the 20s, was sodium fluoride. And I've read the studies, University of Texas from the 30s, about increases cancer, causes IQ reduction. We've given it to rats, causes infertility. And there are literally, from China, England, the U.S., Canada, thousands of studies. I mean, and these are prestigious organizations. They know full well, and for anybody that doubts it, just search the term fluoride cancer. And it'll be the U.S. government going, yeah, it at least doubles cancer in boys and bone cancer. I mean, they know. So please continue.
Yes, well, most of the studies that have been done on health effects, and you're absolutely right, there is no argument that fluoride causes health problems, health effects, because millions of people in India and China, parts of Africa and Mexico, which have high natural levels of fluoride, have been injured, seriously injured.
It's a scourge.
It's a scourge. And so the only argument then is whether there is an adequate margin of safety between the doses which we know cause harm and the doses that people are going to get.
But it bioaccumulates.
It bioaccumulates, and the doses, and remember, once you put it in the water, you can't control the dose. You can't control how much water people drink. You can't control how much they get from other sources. And you're right, too. They're now using sulfural fluoride as a fumigant on foodstuffs in warehouses, and that, too, leaves residues of fluoride. And today, the Center of Disease Control said that 41% of American children, 41% of American children between the ages of 12 and 15 have dental fluorosis. And that's the indicator that the child has been overexposed to fluoride. And this is the government. This is the government that promotes fluoridation is admitting, whoops, 41% of our kids have been overexposed to fluoride. But it only hurts their teeth. Doesn't hurt anything else, for which they have no scientific evidence, but...
In fact, it's to the contrary.
It's to the contrary, yes, absolutely. I mean, the thing that concerns me most, and one of those facts I learned 14 years ago, was the level in mother's milk is extremely low as far as fluoride is concerned. Extremely low, 0.004 parts per million. This means...
The body thinks it's bad and is designed to filter it.
Absolutely. This means a bottle-fed baby in Austin or any other town that's fluoridated is getting... 250 times more fluoride than nature intended.
But what about the studies that show at 10 to 20, it's in that spectrum, yeah. if a young mammal, this is rats, guinea pigs, humans, rhesus monkeys, are given it, there's an overall IQ reduction of 10 to 20 points. I mean, this is devastating.
Well, these are studies mainly from China. There have been about 18 from China, another one from Iran, in Mexico, and India. And yes, they have found a lowering of IQ associated with fairly moderate exposure, like 1.9 parts per million. And I went to the two villages in China where they established that level. So if you're lowering IQ at 1.9 parts per million in a study group of a few hundred kids, you don't have anywhere near an adequate margin of safety to protect the whole.
Well, many U.S. cities have...
Back, CKLN listeners. That's right, that was Dr. Paul Connett from the Fluoride Action Network at fluoridealert.org. He's got a new book out called The Case Against Fluoride, and you can go to alexjonespodcast.com to get a commercial-free copy of that interview, or just Google Dr. Paul Connett and Alex Jones. That was from the 9th of November, a couple of days ago. Here on Remembrance Day, what are we fighting for? Well, We're fighting for the same thing we always fight for as individuals, and that is freedom, peace, prosperity, to simplify it. Now, that also means freedom from health risks, and that also means fighting for the kids who can't fight as easily. Now, I was on the city of Toronto's website yesterday, and all I did was type into Scroogle, which is kind of like Google, but it filters your IP supposedly or something. I typed in Toronto fluoride, and I started going nuts, and I started collecting a bunch of stuff and looking at the research, and there's a ton of agencies responsible for regulating the health and safety of our water supply, who we can appeal to. There's a ton of research that's gone into this. There's been a ton of small communities that have approached Health Canada or the City of Toronto and other regulatory agencies involved in this, and the sub-bodies they set up and so on. And they brought up valid concerns, which have by and large been dismissed. But there were some recommendations based on some panels that have yet to be followed up on, that we can certainly help them follow up on it. All it takes is Googling Toronto fluoride to find this out, because everything is primary source information straight from the City of Toronto's website, where they admit that there is a risk from overexposure. And yet, you know, what they don't say is that there's no way for us to sort of regulate our exposure to fluoride. You know, it's one of those things where we can't really we can't we you get fluoride from a number of places, from drinking water, from water in the preparation of foods and so on, from food itself where it's often used as a pesticide, from air pollution. And fluoride actually started off the environmental movement in Denora, New York, back in the 1930s, because it was a byproduct of aluminum production at a chemical plant, and it was making all the workers sick. And so, as a PR exercise with Edward Bernays and others, the industry basically said, you know what, we're gonna sell this to the dental industry and say it's good for your teeth if ingested. And in my little exchange with Mayor Miller on Twitter last night, where basically he posted something silly, some Monty Python clip about elderberries and something like that. This computer is way too sticky. That's also why I've been referring to anything online today, because I can't pull up anything on the computer here very well. But he mentioned that he suffered from a lack of fluoride as a kid. And I basically tweeted back, well, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way. You may have, you may not have. But if the point is, you know, to stop the suffering of kids, well, some people today are claiming kids are suffering from the effects of fluoride. So you might think that you suffered from not having fluoride as a kid, and that was your issue. But if you believe kids are suffering, if you look into the fact that kids may be suffering from the effects of fluoride today, then the same principle applies. You know, if they were suffering from a lack of then, maybe they're suffering from too much now. And so certainly, Mr. Miller, you know, you can pull some sort of Eisenhower 61 last speech from office. There's a military-industrial complex. We must watch for their rise in power, which could be unspeakable. Basically, President Dwight D. Eisenhower in January 1961, in his last speech from office on national television, basically warned of the rise of the military-industrial complex. And he coined the phrase essentially in that speech, and told you know, an audience of tens of millions of Americans about you know, who they should watch out for, because a rise in their power could be disastrous, and in fact it has been. So, you know, I suggested that Mr. Miller have his own sort of Eisenhower in 61, you know, legacy sealing moment on the fluoride issue, and we'll see. He also tweeted, you know, the standard sort of. You know, you need fluoride for, because the dentist says so or whatever. And so you can check out, you can check this out at my Twitter account, twitter.com/MayorVeej, where, since I can't access it easily right now, I can't quote it easily, but you can see the exchange. He basically tweeted three times and I tweeted 33. But the point is that there's a ton of information there on fluoride as well. And other amazing articles up there, including 10 toxins in our daily environments from an Australian organization dealing with the fluoride issue. Why is the fluoride issue so important? Well, all right, let's make one thing clear here. As is currently being sold on the cover of the 24 newspaper here, saluting the troops, Remembrance Day, Major Pierre Huet of the Canadian Forces takes a somber moment to reflect on his fallen comrades at Beechwood Cemetery in Ottawa. For more coverage of Memorial Day, see pages 3 and 9. Vet shares his stories. There's a cute blonde, blue-eyed kid here on page 3. It says here, Brandon 5 stands with his great-grandfather, Harold Burgess, 90, who visits schools each year to relate his war stories. Black military battalion to be honored at Queen's Park. And on and on and on. Well, to be perfectly honest, outside of the fact that 9/11 was an inside job and this latest round of sort of global aggression needs to be checked by sensible people worldwide, and that needs to be looked into and exposed. And the only reason we haven't had more 9/11s is because people are hip to that. We just got to get to the next stage of pressuring our elected officials to change policy based on what many of us in the public know. But outside of that issue, there is the issue of, do you want to go overseas and fight with other countries on behalf of big corporations so the big corporations can steal their stuff? Or would you rather stay here, or if you are here, be here and fight the big corporations stealing stuff from us, including our jobs, by outsourcing them overseas to third world countries and enslaving people over there while depriving people over here? You know, so and the ones who are poisoning us and dumbing us down with things like fluoride in our water supply and elsewhere. It's actually the active ingredient in Prozac, so they're sedating us, you know, with fluoride, just like the Nazis and commies did during World War II to prisoners whom they used fluoride on for the same purpose. Or do you want to fight them? Do you want to fight the New World Order behind globalization? Everything's kind of becoming public at this point, you know, but we're pretty much getting thrown stories left, right, and center. And yet at the same time on yesterday's Metro, there's a picture of beautiful blonde Malin Ackerman, Canadian actress from The Watchmen. And then on the right-hand side, there's fewer faces in the book. Late night host Jimmy Kimmel urges Facebook users to cut the, quote, friend fat, and announces next Friday, November 17th, as National Unfriend Day. And so as Lupe Fiasco sings, you can go to sleep, you can go to sleep. Ironically, yeah, you know what? That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to sedate us so they can take our stuff. Dumb down, dehumanize, rob, and kill us is the plan, at least according to people like Alex Jones, who've looked into it for 15 years, and the dozens and dozens, heck, even hundreds of guests, at least the majority of them, he has on his show from all sorts of disciplines, who at least co-sign some of the evidence with respect to, you know, what's going on. Since we can all feel that, you know, it only stands to reason that here on CKLN's Rude Awakening, as your host BK, aka VJ, it is my duty, it is my obligation to make sure that Canadians out there have an opportunity to feel a reason to think that fighting is worthwhile, and to feel a reason to sort of humanely expose some of the lies that have been told to the brave men and women who did fight for our country, although under false pretenses, and to deal with issues of the present. You know, we're getting, and Mr. Bill Watson will be up next with your four-hour jazz bungee experience, so do stick around for that. He's a jazz genius, and you will have a lot of fun. But just in looking at the media here, aside from the sort of the news on TV, which is scary as hell, you know, home invasions going on and so on, as our society is turned colder, you know, through our cultural socialization here. There's green power firms want to dupe public, says opposition leader Tim Hudak, conservative opposition leader here. And basically, yeah, in Spain, their switch to the green economy cost them, you know, caused their unemployment to rise massively. And based on the way the green economy has been structured by the same people fluoridating us, GMO fooling us, aspartaming us, and aspartaming, that's a good one, because that also sedates us and lowers our IQ and so on and causes cancer. You know, the same people behind this are not pushing these initiatives in our best interest. So it's good to look into this issue more from yesterday's Metro. But I'm also knowing there's a ton of random international news and yet very little on how to control our political system. Well, I got to tell you, the only thing we got to do is control the people that control the people with guns so they can shoot the people who are fluoridating our water supply and medicating us without our permission. That's all we got to do. That's all we got to do. And so, you know, on that note, I do invite everybody to look for ways to do that. Good places to get informed, first and foremost, and to inform your neighbors of include Infowars.com. Tons of information on there on a variety of issues, including the fluoride issue and the interview with Dr. Paul Conant, who was in the studio in Austin, Texas the other day with Alex Jones. Naturalnews.com for the best health information out there. I know if 100% of people in Toronto knew about Natural News, there's no way in hell 40% of us would get cancer, as has been predicted by the big cancer charities. And also, with respect to that, VigilantCitizen.com. If you have friends out there that are into celebrities, definitely get them hip to VigilantCitizen.com and TheIndustryExposed.com, where they can learn a bit more about why our culture is sold to us and what, you know, and who's actually behind it. And vran.org, vran.org, where you can get vaccine exemption forms. Got to shout this out on a regular basis here during flu season as more and more of us are pressured to take dangerous vaccines. Another issue is, of course, locally. What can we do? How can we get informed? Who can we support? Well, the Conspiracy Culture book and DVD store at Queen and Roncesvalles at conspiracyculture.com is having a screening of the film What in the World Are They Spraying on November 20th. I'll be giving away tickets for that on one of the next couple of shows here on CKLN Radio. And I got to be honest with you. I was in Milton the other day, and there was a huge, massive chemtrail that just went right over the small town of Milton and was creating skunk stripes in the sky where just to the left and right of it, north and south of it, as the trails are going east-west, it was perfectly clear blue. And there was these sort of skunk stripes of clouds right there up in the middle over the city of Milton. And I'm just like, oh, good Lord, they're sedating the suburbs. I got the video. I think I'll pop it online on my YouTube channel today, here in an hour or two. But I digest. What is the point of me going through all these things? ConspiracyCulture.com is a great place to get informed. Buy DVDs, burn copies, share them with your neighbors, among the most effective ways to get them hip to what's going on. PressForTruth.ca, phenomenal journalism company here in Toronto. New film, United We Fall, worth a look on DVD. Yours truly is in it as one of the experts battling a bunch of 70 and 80-year-old globalists who basically admit their plans for world domination and certainly domination of North America. Also, TorontoTruthSeekers.com, weekly street actions every Saturday since July 2009 have been making a difference and showing a commitment to these issues above and beyond. And yet, one that is desperately needed at this time. And the Toronto street news out there, flip a homeless guy, Toonie, get some good karma, get some good info, and pass it on. Keep in mind here on November 11th, 2010, that it is Remembrance Day. Do be respectful to different points of view out there, but do not let the truth be a casualty of war and a casualty of remembering war, as it so often is every year on Remembrance Day. I'm out of here, folks. Have a fantastic Thursday. Have a fantastic weekend. You can get at me at vijay.sarma@gmail.com or blackkrishna, blackkrishna @gmail.com. And you can also get downloads of the show at radioforall.net, archive.org, and blackkrishna.blogspot.com. Hope you enjoyed yourselves. Peace out, everybody.